Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name is David Reed and this man here is Mr. Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello, David.
How are you doing?
Well, I went on holiday last week.
Right.
To Norfolk Broads. And I was on a boat for 5 days, and I still feel a bit, my balance is still impaired.
You're like Kevin Costner at the end of Waterworld, where he finds dry land, spoilers, and it doesn't move right. Right, you still get your sea legs on.
Yes, and I am also like Kevin Costner in the fact that I don't really have much of a personality.
But you do have gills behind your ears, and that seems to make up for it.
Yes, but I'm very bland.
Webbed feet.
I've maintained my career by being consistently bland.
Hey, it's a choice. It's very hard to get people's attention being bland, but it's very hard to not offend them once you have a career already. So maybe if you're very interesting at the beginning and then quickly turn to bland so you don't scare them off.
Yeah, stay bland.
That's the way you do it.
And then it's just you're the safe bet.
Yeah.
Don't do anything unusual.
That said, I am joining in your Kevin Costner piss-taking, but I have quite enjoyed him in some films. Yeah, I've got a real soft spot for Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, for instance.
But that is because it's a good film.
Correct.
Without Kevin Costner.
I do have a soft spot, not as soft, sort of slightly turgid spot for Waterworld as well, just because everyone shat on it so much, and I think it's quite fun.
And Bull Durham is quite a good film as well.
Yeah. Dances with Wolves, isn't
it? I've only seen that literally once when I was about 16, so I should really revisit it. Is it as good as everyone said?
Who can say?
You can.
I haven't seen it in a while. No, I can't say. We'd have to watch it together. Hello.
Holding hands.
If you want to hold hands for the duration of Bull Durham, then sure, let's do it.
We've just come from doing your podcast in the studio.
We have. Marek Larwood is in my other podcast, I should say, Inside the Comedian, where we got down hard to some hard truths, I think.
Well, at some point you said that that's not going on, particularly offensive. That's definitely not going in.
That's correct, and it won't. That will never be heard.
That was really offensive.
The things you said will never be heard by another human being. We're here to talk about films, both current releases and old classics. But before we do, we should mention that we are sponsored by Her Film Project, who are an organisation that help promote diversity in film. So if you would like to learn more about what they do, go to herfilmproject.com and follow Her Film Project on Twitter.
Do you need to say at anyone? Do I need to say at Her Film Project?
Now, this is a thing that
people stop saying.
I noticed other people had stopped. It's like saying www. Before a web address. You just don't need to anymore. I don't think people know there's always an at before a Twitter handle.
But it's ingrained in my psyche now.
Right. And it will be a signifier to millennials that you are old and they will shun you.
Well, that was the thing when Hotmail was down a couple of weeks ago for the day, and I still use Hotmail. And there were all these things like, oh, who still uses Hotmail? And hang on. I mean, everyone used it literally seven or eight years ago.
And then we moved on because we were so hip and young.
I really hate millennials. I mean, if you're listening to this and you are a millennial, I hate you.
Well, I'm technically a millennial, Marek, so yeah.
When were you born? 80?
82.
Oh, Millennium's is 1980, isn't it? Well, 1981, isn't it?
I think so. Well, I'm the generation who had a mobile phone at school. I think I'm the first generation to do.
Well, yeah, I didn't have that.
Ah. But there we go. You hate me. I mean, and that is very clear. That's very clear. But it's good of you to keep most of your scorn off the podcast.
Imagine if we're feeling it cross now. Wonder what it'd be like in 2049.
Now, there's a segue, because I know some things that happened in 2049.
How come?
I went to the cinema to see Blade Runner 2049.
I went to the cinema to see Blade Runner 2049.
Well, I think we both knew it was a film we both had to see. I mean, we're big fans of the original, right?
Yes.
It's Blade Runner is... When is Blade Runner set? Can we remember?
2019? It's quite close to now.
Yeah, it is. I think it's past. I think the Blade Runner... It's like 2012 or something. Anyway, we don't know. But this is the sequel to Blade Runner.
2019.
This is the sequel to Blade Runner, not directed by Ridley Scott, but actually handed over to Denis Villeneuve, who is a French-Canadian film director responsible for Prisoners, Arrival, Sicario, films we've talked... Enemy. Films we've talked about before. And it carries on... 30 years is what we just said, after the events of Blade Runner, and Harrison Ford reprises his role as Rick Deckard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, first things first, fan of the original?
Yes, I remember I watched it when, I think I said this before, I was about 14, 15 and didn't like it at all. And then
it's quite slow for a young teenager.
And then I watched it in my 20s, and I watched it again a couple of years ago, and I thought it was absolutely magnificent.
I think it's if you see my favourite cut is the final cut, I think it's called, which is
I get mixed up about what cuts what.
Basically, all the cuts are pretty much the same, apart from the original cinema edit, which has Harrison Ford's lazy voiceover over some bits because they don't trust the audience knows what's going on, and it kills it. It makes it really charmless, and it also doesn't have the dream sequence in it that Ridley Scott cut into it in order to make it. In a very elegant and subtle way, imply that Deckard might be a replicant himself.
Sorry, buddy, sniffing around my snacks. Good boy, buddy.
Buddy the dog, buddy the podcast dog. Come here, mate. Come here. So this
me or buddy?
Not you. You stay where you are.
Okay.
So this film starts with Ryan Gosling playing the eponymous Blade Runner, and he knows from the off he is a replicant. That's how they've changed it. They've Terminator 2'd it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they flipped it on its head. What did you make of it all for starters?
Well, before we start, I went to watch the Everyman in, which used to be the Odeon in Muswell Hill.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was their cinema, and they used to be the screen one, used to be upstairs, now you're downstairs.
Right.
It was so loud that I could feel it. My girlfriend and I both put earplugs in because, and you could still hear. It was literally I've never been in a cinema where it was that, you know, you can feel your eardrums actually hurting. We sat right in the middle, and I thought, is this, they must have fucked this up.
Yes, that must be the staff.
And it was just really painful, and thank God we had earplugs.
Yeah.
Because it was just not...
Well, also, because it's one of the longest fucking films of recent years. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes. Did that affect your experience?
No, because I put earplugs in and you could hear at a normal level afterwards.
Yeah.
I thought the score and soundtrack was incredible.
Agreed.
I thought cinematography by Roger Deakins, famous, was sublime. I love Ryan Gosling. I mean, it's all...
I thought Ryan Gosling had a very tricky job to do in this one. Because he is playing a robotic character, and it is supposed to be in the same way that we've seen a lot of times with things about robots. You know, replicants aren't robots per se, but they are supposed to be manufactured people. And so these films always explore what is humanity. And it's got that theme in the same way that The Iron Giant does, in the same way Pinocchio does in a lot of ways. So he is being handed a robotic performance, which actually I found makes it hard to give a shit about him, because he played it very well for what he was being asked to do, but I found it a bit difficult to care about his struggle.
I really liked what I mean, the original, it was so groundbreaking, so ahead of its time, and it did scenes, the first scene, the interview scene at the start.
Yes.
You watch that, you don't know what's going on.
Yes.
You think, what is it? You feel so weird and so alien, yet it sticks in your mind. The scene when Harrison Ford is shooting down the first Blade Runner, the tattooed woman.
Yes.
The chase scene, that whole scene is incredible. Him eating noodles in the wet bar is a seminal moment, you know.
Even the scene where Harrison Ford is pretending to be a nerdy reporter in order to get in with the snake woman.
Yeah.
Is sort of... It's weirdly hypnotic because you've never seen Harrison Ford play a character before.
Yeah.
You know, but you're right, in terms of iconic scenes, the office of the Tyrell Corporation with it, you know, everything is sort of gold and the shadow of the shutter. It's, the cinematography
when you first see that, there's a brilliant documentary of how Ridley Scott did it all and how he sort of intercut with sort of models at the end film and how he got that look of it. It's whether a lot of it was done, and the original was so great that they, and the Rutger Hauer scene, I think one of my favourite moments in film, they already had those moments in place. They already had the style of the film in place for this film.
Yes,
they already had that style. I thought if you like Blade Runner, you will love Blade Runner 2, because I think the feel of it's the same, the tone's the same.
I agree.
I just don't know whether there are those. It might take time for me to settle. I don't know whether it has those scenes. I hear him banging on about this, don't they? The scenes where you think, these are absolutely brilliant moments that I will always remember this scene because it feels like something totally new.
I agree. I got that feeling in the, I think possibly the opening shots where we get this sort of the helicopter shots over fields in California where they're all covered in plastic, and it was like I was like, wow, this is incredible. And in fact, that entire opening scene with Dave Bautista, who I really rate as an actor, he's a guy who's come from wrestling.
Oh, really?
And he's in Guardians of the Galaxy, and he played a mute character in Spectre. But no, I think he's just really got something where you put a camera on him and there is stuff going on behind the eyes, and he's managed to make it not look like a performance. I think he's genuinely watchable. But anyway, apparently that entire opening sequence on a farm, as I say, was originally intended as the opening scene of Blade Runner, the original, and they cut it to start Deckard instead in the noodle bar.
Okay.
And so they shot it for this instead. But anyway, Ryan Gosling basically is sent to track down replicants, even though he is one himself, and to retire them, which is a euphemistic way of saying murder them. And he ends up uncovering some conspiracy that I will not spoil, but that feels a bit Children of Men-y, actually, you know.
Yes.
This film, I enjoyed it. I thought it was far too long. It is nearly an hour longer than the original Blade Runner. And although I appreciated everything that was happening and I followed it, it didn't move me. And I think that is always the best test. It wanted to move me and it didn't. And I think it felt very engineered rather than felt. But that is a problem of modern cinema, I think, the blockbusters. They feel like every single piece has been discussed by committee and all of the ragged edges have been cut off until you've just got this very precise, correct storytelling that ends up being a bit robotic itself. So in a story that is supposed to be about finding the kernel of what it means to have a soul, what separates humans from machines, ironically, their exploration of it is quite robotic itself.
Yeah, I mean, I quite liked it. There's also a love story. Ryan Gosling has a sort of hologram, sort of generated.
Yeah, he's in love with the paperclip from Microsoft Word, basically.
I really like that.
Did you? I liked it as an idea.
I thought it was really brave to, because in the original Blade Runner, I love the bit when they've got that photograph.
Yes.
And they go inside.
Right? Zoom and enhance.
It's incredible. That, the first time you see that, that's incredible.
The legacy of the zoom enhance across all of TV and cinema is immense, isn't it? It can't be overstated.
But when you first watch Blade Runner, you think, well, you can go inside this photo and look in. And I just found that absolutely incredible and a really risky thing to do. I really like the fact they went, do you know what, let's give Ryan Gosling this, who is a robot himself, his robot.
Yes.
And even more, what's the word, sort of computerised form.
Yeah, abstracted form
that
of life.
He's in love with. And I like the fact they couldn't touch and it was just...
That was very interesting and... clever and a new idea. I totally agree.
And I was pleased to see, because Blade Runner was a film with new ideas.
Yes.
And that this had incorporated some new ideas.
I still don't feel they really knew what we were supposed to feel about it by the end, though. Like, again, it was a story that intrigued me but didn't move me, that love story.
I like the Peter and the Wolf truck whenever she turned on.
Yeah. No, there's lots to love, but it's, for me, there's something lacking in its soul, and I think there's a great irony to that.
But yeah, I enjoyed it. I wasn't disappointed, but I wasn't fully fulfilled because it's got, I mean, that's one, I think Blade Runner is in my top 10 films of all time, so it's got a lot to try and
live up to.
Yeah, and also, although to live up to would be incredible, but it didn't fail, and I didn't feel as though, oh, you've sullied the franchise.
Oh, if we're measuring these alongside all of Harrison Ford is now 30 years older films,
yeah,
this is the best one compared to Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and Force Awakens. I think it's the most satisfying return to his character.
It's one of the best sequels in the last 10 years, I would say that.
But there is still something missing for me. You know what? I have not enjoyed Jared Leto in anything.
I agree with you. I did not. He plays the sort of head of the Tyrell company.
He's the Tyrell equivalent. Tyrell has gone bankrupt, and the new company, headed by Jared Leto, who is called Wallace, it's the Wallace Corporation, has bought up all of Tyrell's assets. So
I could tell he was good, and the way he was speaking, he was almost speaking like a half robotic, sort of measured blind man.
Right.
But I
just thought there was nothing to it. It felt like a GCSE drama exam performance to me.
He always feels a bit like that.
Yeah, he does not in any way excite me, move me, interest me, or entertain me. Like, all of his scenes could have been cut, and it would have been a better film because it would have been shorter.
I agree with you. That was he was the worst.
You know who was originally intended for that role?
Mike McShane.
No, it was originally David Bowie. And he died before they could shoot it.
Oh, no.
It would have been interesting, though, wouldn't it? To have Bowie versus Harrison Ford in the sort of interrogation. He kind of...
Put the gun down, Deckard.
David Bowie, you must excuse my many robotic eyes.
That's good. That's better.
He was terrible as the Joker, albeit in a film that was not supporting him by giving the Joker anything of note to do. He was boring in this. He's going to have to wow me in something. He got all the plaudits for Dallas Buyers Club. And my God, Matthew McConaughey is dragging that, you know, is the best thing in that film. Mm. Jared Leto is not that interesting. He's just put some makeup on and everyone applauds like he's broken boundaries or something.
It's that sort of thing that when you go to an actor who really tries too hard, he seems like he's a real knob in real life.
You know what? I found all of his performances robotic. And that, again, I come back to it, but I think it's what is missing from this this film is Harrison Ford has always had such a human performance, and everyone in this is a robot when it's supposed to be about escaping the robotic nature of life. You know, and looking at it the other way, in the original, it's not only a sort of sci-fi version of film noir where Deckard has to track down these fugitives, basically, in a version of Prohibition-era Chicago or whatever. It's a sort of allegory. You've also got, simultaneously, the Roy Batty storyline of a psychopath who only wants the opportunity to live, and if he can't, he's going to destroy his creator out of vengeance. And his storyline is what I think elevates Blade Runner to be something even far more interesting, because he is the most alive character in Blade Runner. Deckard is just living this sort of sloggy, mundane existence that he doesn't really know why he's doing anything, or if he even wants to be killing replicants. He just does it because it's his job. And he's almost more robotic than Roy Batty, who is desperately wanting to be alive. And they're telling that story better than they do in the modern one, where there is no character like that. Everyone is basically bland and a bit robotic.
Well, I think there's, I do think the original's got a simpler story and a purer story.
Yes.
And it's more clear cut. This one does that thing where you've got a sequel, you have to sort of tie up things, and it gets a bit too complicated, and maybe there's a bit too much going on.
Well, there's too much complicated in terms of plot strands, but there's less depth.
Yes.
It's certainly beautifully shot, and the score
really, it's
is
really good. You should definitely go to the cinema and see it. I'll give it 7 or 8 Marics.
I think I'd give it 6.
Okay.
Or maybe 7. I mean, I'm being unfair. If I put it alongside other things I've given 7, it's probably well worthy of 7, you know. But I was just slightly disappointed by just you sort of don't get the point of it. You're not feeling any of the story you're telling. You're just telling me the beats of it.
You go to a nice restaurant, you order some of the menu, looks delicious, and it turns up on the plate, every nook's delicious. You know it's supposed to be delicious, but it just tastes a bit normal.
It just tastes like chicken.
Everything tastes like chicken.
I think it's time for this. Here's a letter from Stephen Device about Mother. Sorry, about Mother! He says, "Dear David and Marek, I wasn't surprised to hear on your recent episode that Marek hated Mother! This was the most divisive cinema experience I've had in years. A few people walked out, and didn't just do so quietly. About 80% of the way through, an older couple stood up and did so quite noisily, then walked along the entire length of the screen at the very front of the cinema without ducking and complaining loudly that it was just rubbish. At the end, the girl next to me apologised for bringing her husband to it. A group walked out ahead of me, were loudly talking about how awful it was. It probably says something about it as a film, or me as a viewer, that I really liked it.
But what?
But could also totally see where they were coming from. I think a lot of the problem with it is that the way it's being marketed, at least here in Australia, is as a kind of horror film. It's more of a strained allegory that maybe functions as a mystery. The enjoyment gained from it, for me anyway, came from trying to work out what was going on and why. Like a good mystery film, once I felt I had the measure of it, things paid off. There's a bit near the end, just before they walked out, actually, that was greeted with shock in the cinema, but totally made sense to me because it felt like I had got it at that point. Personally, I think it's the best Aronofsky film since The Fountain, but then I also liked Noah, so I might just be an Aronofsky tragic. I also think it's meant not just as an allegory for the way we treat the planet and the entire Bible played out in nightmare fashion, but as a way of Aronofsky making sense of his relationship with Rachel Weisz and imagining how horrible it must be to be married to him. Which makes it all the weirder that as a result of filming this, he and Jennifer Lawrence are now apparently in a relationship themselves. Keep watching the film, Stephen Device." It continues to be divisive. No pun intended. Mother, you did not enjoy it at all.
Yeah, that's shit.
Right. Do you think there is possibly more to it approaching it as a sort of mystery of what it's really about rather than as a literal story?
No, because I just think it's the metaphor's so clunky anyway.
Is it? Is it obvious from the start?
No, it's not obvious. It changes tone in the film, but it's just not. There's nothing enjoyable. There must be some sort of point of interest in it, and it's so frustrating. And it is. It's the equivalent of a nightmare, a bad dream. Dan Aronofsky's basically told everyone a bad dream he's had, but he's done it at the cost of £50 million.
Hey, he told everyone his anxiety dream, and now he's going out with Jennifer Lawrence. Are you sure you're not just jealous? Because you tell people your nonsense thoughts all the time.
What do you mean?
Well, that's what mostly what this podcast is these days.
What do you mean nonsense?
Sorry, your heartfelt, deeply considered musings.
So you're saying if Jennifer Lawrence isn't this podcast...
Maybe, the tables could be turned. I'd be sat here with Darren Aronofsky, and he'd be talking about cat's bums, and you'd be off with Jennifer Lawrence in LA.
I haven't talked about cat's bums in a while.
No, you should talk about them again.
Here we go. Here's from Caleb. A subject I don't understand. Me neither. Me neither, Caleb. Here we go. Hello, Fandongoliers.
That's quite nice. I like the Fandongoliers.
Mm. Can you help me understand the vetting system of films? I assume there's a hugely protracted way of writing, financing and casting. So at what point do they screen the film and think, nailed it, when clearly they've made a dogshit movie? Do they re-edit, reshoot and reassess? For example, at what point did they watch Suicide Squad and think it was worthy? Do they have screenings to gauge audience response, or, as I suspect in this case, are too financially committed that they have to release it despite it being obviously awful? Is it a case of any press is good press? I just do not understand how so much bullcrap gets released. Are the audiences so stupid that any big budget movie will make money? Are the days of Waterworld and The Postman gone? Were utter shite films were ignored because they're utter shite? How do films like Suicide Squad, King Arthur, Passengers get released? Is no one saying, hang on Hollywood, these bullshit, and soon we're going to lose our audience completely if we don't make a decent film, or does no one give a shit?
It's a good question.
Oh, sorry, dogs next door.
The dogs next door are being complete dicks, as usual. Shut up, dog. It's a good question. It's a good question, and passionately put. I think these films cost millions, and they will often, in the case of a big blockbuster, put the same amount of money as the budget, if not double the amount of money as the budget, into the press and publicity. So by the time you have spent, you know, whatever it is the budget of a big film these days, you know, let's say $400 million, you are going to release your film, even if you're a bit embarrassed by it. And part of the reason films still work, even if they're dog shit, is people pay before they've seen it. And that is also the reason so much attention in terms of whether a film is a success or not is paid to the opening weekend. The opening weekend is before word of mouth can even start going. It's people who've bought a ticket based on the hype, not based on the film. And so Suicide Squad is one of the worst pieces of cinema ever made. It's incoherent, unentertaining tripe. It is, every single choice they've made is the wrong one, apart from possibly the casting of Margot Robbie. Everything else is rubbish. And that's why she's the only one who's actually going to carry on in that character and get more mileage out of it, probably. It's exactly that. Once you've spent that much money, you have to release it and try and recoup some of it back if you're going to keep your jobs. It's as simple as that, isn't it? I mean, there's plenty they can do in terms of minimising damage done to it by the press, because with the big studios who, you know, they are the ones who grant the press access to their stars, to their directors, to their writers. They can withhold access for future projects if the press disobey them. So they can... They can put an embargo on the film, which means the press aren't allowed to talk about it until a specific date. And this used to happen when Film Fandango went along to the press junkets and stuff back in the Absolute Radio days. We would go and watch a film, and then we were told it was embargoed until a certain date, and we go, ah, shit, well, we can't talk about it then. And the reason is usually because the film isn't very good. So they want to get to the opening weekend without the press killing their opening weekend sales.
Well, the estimated budget of Suicide Squad was $175 million.
Right.
So opening weekend.
Yeah.
It's August in the US. It took $133 million.
So that's a failure.
But worldwide, it says the gross US was $420.5 million. So right.
It will have made it back
worldwide. When it made 745 million, so it made 550 million.
Right. I think the reason they're so excited about opening weekends is films tend to peak and then slowly tail off. And so they can sort of predict how much money it's going to make globally based upon that, which is why they get so excited. But yeah, anyone who's on a percentage share of profits won't see a penny, not until the budget is paid back, but until the publicity budget is paid back as well. And so if the studio has spunked a shitload of money on this film, most people won't get paid if it doesn't do well, you know. No, it's all big business and incredibly complex stuff.
Normally, in terms of reshoots, the only experience I've got, I did a film I got cut out of that was, and they had 7 days for, basically I was in the in-between, there's two, they shot an alternative ending, so they had 7 days to reshoot it.
Right.
And I was
so
in
the original ending hadn't tested well, presumably.
Well, I don't know. They had another version,
right?
But they had 7 days worth in the budget for reshoots. That's a low budget film.
Yeah.
So they'll have reshoots on every film. They'll have at least
budget because they can't release it as an incoherent film. But they also don't want to be throwing good money after bad if they think the film's going to be a stinker no matter what.
And I think for the big films, they do test them. I went along to a screening of an early cut of a film, and they had literally had us in like Prisoners. It was The View, and the film was awful, but you had to sign a thing so you can't talk about it.
Right.
It didn't have the music on it, and some of the shots weren't graded properly, but they wanted to test what everyone thought. And I left early. And I said I'd leave because I didn't want to go to the loo, but it was so awful I left.
Right.
And they were literally really trying to push me back in the cinema and stay to the end. It was a really uncomfortable experience where they give away free tickets for this screening and all they want is to get your opinion so they can reach, you know, because the cost of it is quite big.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it is interesting though. I mean, but of course, you know, if you've spent $20 million, you put it in a cinema no matter what.
Well, I mean, this is unprecedented, but because we had a shortage of letters, we've got, an email from the same bloke?
From Stephen Device?
No, from K-Deb again.
Oh, okay.
No, it's just from Callum, it's fine. I thought it was the same one. Who has written about Blade Runner.
Oh, that's good. Timely.
Caleb and Callum. I mean, they're very similar names.
This is from Callum. He says, "Dear David, Marek, Buddy and other noises, I recently rewatched the second half of Blade Runner when it came on one of those Sky movie channels. I last watched it about 10 years ago when I was still in college. I remember thinking at the time that it was a bit slow and boring. I thought that Rutger Hauer did an all right bit of talking at the end, but he'd lost me in previous scenes where he was howling like a wolf in his little blue shorts. Obviously, this film is widely regarded as a sci-fi masterpiece, 140 in the IMDb game, and I didn't want people thinking I was a divvy, so I lied to everyone and said I liked it. I really enjoyed re-watching it. I loved the Vangelis score, the visuals didn't feel dated, and Scott's ultra-neon depiction of LA is horrible. I like seeing Harrison Ford playing basically a pretty lifeless 40s noir detective. I only watched half of it, though, so I don't know what all that shit about horses was about. The film isn't slow or boring, and it's loads better than most of today's sci-fi dross. Also, Rutger Hauer is brilliant, especially that bit where he howls like a wolf in his little blue shorts. It's weird revisiting a film and having your opinion completely changed. I've just seen a poster on the side of a bus for that new one with Ryan Gosling. That film can fuck right off. What films do you think can fuck right off? Watch films, Callum." Well, Callum, if you enjoyed it, then as we've said, you should probably check out.
Yeah, I think you'll like it.
Blade Runner 2049. What films can fuck right off?
All the superhero films, all the sequels, all the Spider-Man sequels.
The extended universe Lego movies, I think, can probably fuck off. Lego Ninjitsu or whatever it's called.
Yeah, just too much of the same thing.
Too much of the same thing. Yeah. But no, by and large, films can exist, you know, be judged on their own merits once they exist, I reckon. You know, just keep making films, guys. Right, well, I have actually been to see another film in the cinema this week, Mary.
Two cinema films.
I went to the London Film Festival to see a film from a writer-director duo.
Torvald and Dean.
No, it was not the latest Torvald and Dean, although I must go check it out. They previously did a film that I thoroughly enjoyed and I caught on streaming services and had never heard of and just took a complete punt on, and it was very good. And I talked about it on the show, actually. It's called Spring, and it was a supernatural romance, but I thought it was excellently written, directed, and the performances that were, especially from the leading lady, were fantastic. And so I thought, hey, I'll go support their new venture, because they're proper independent filmmakers. You know, that you won't, you're unlikely to have heard of them. This is their third film, but they're called Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead. They're Americans, and this is their latest film called The Endless.
Okay.
Now this. They both directed it. Justin Benson wrote it. They star in it as well.
What's it about then?
The Endless is about two brothers, played by themselves, who decide to go back to the cult they escaped from as teenagers.
No, it doesn't. Doesn't bode well.
To see if their memory of how sinister and and brainwashing it was are correct, because one of them is younger than the other, and so he actually remembers it quite fondly and only has his brother's word for it being a sinister place. So they go back there to see what's going on, and anyway, it gets stranger from there, basically, and it is vaguely supernatural and properly weird, and I won't tell you how it builds from there, but they filmed it in 17 days. As I said, they are both the directors and the lead cast. It had a budget of $1 million, so this is a properly low budget film. It looks stunning, actually.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, and I really, really loved it. I thought it was brilliant. Not brilliant enough to stick around for their Q&A afterwards. I was very tired, but
I want to see the film. I don't want to see people talking about it.
I mean, they had flown all the way from LA to come and talk to us. They got straight off the plane. They were tired themselves. But I was like, nah, I'm just going to walk.
Did everyone else leave and go? No,
quite a lot of people. Well, the thing is, it was in Central London. It was at the Pitch House Central, and the film started at 9:45 p.m.
No, it's quite
so
late.
By the time a 2-hour film has gone on, you're ready for bed, because we all know that the tube's going to shut down, so we're not going to stick around longer. But anyway, it starts with them going and finding this weird sort of commune in the desert, you know, and it's got that beautiful thing of just in America, which reminds me of Breaking Bad, actually. They're just in those desolate desert landscapes where everything is just dust and scrubland, and there's this little sort of community of slightly overly friendly people living in these like huts in the middle of it, and it's like, what's going on here?
I mean, not good, I bet.
Yeah, well, and it starts to get strange, really, really strange. There's this sort of redneck hick who walks around like he's permanently tensing his entire body, and he never talks to anyone. And then,
is it a horror or a thriller? Is it violent, or can you tell us what style of film it is?
It's a psychological thriller, I'd say, that, but it basically turns into a horror, but not in a slasher way. It's more supernatural and weird than that. It actually reminded me a lot of Primer.
I thought you were going to say a bum ghost.
Nothing reminds me of a bum ghost, because I've yet to meet one.
Well, I'm thinking about that being the supernatural sequel to Bumming Man.
A bum ghost. A bum ghost. Not the, but a
no,
bum
no,
ghost.
No, it's called Bum Ghost.
I quite like a bum ghost. It's got a rhythm to it.
It's not called, it's called Bum Ghost.
Right, I'm going to make a bum ghost, and we'll see who wins. It'll be like Ants and Bugs Life.
No, never will look it up on the, it'll be in the list, a bum ghost come before bum ghost.
That's right. Then someone will release AAA Bum Ghost about ghost that looks like a battery.
But surely AAA should go behind A.
You're right, it would. You're absolutely right. It
so
should.
AAA Bum Ghost wouldn't go anywhere.
It would have to be 2049 Bum Ghost.
So numbers go first?
Numbers go first, yeah.
What about 1000 Bum Ghosts?
That would be before 2049 Bum Ghost.
Now, is it decimal? So there's 0.1.
Yeah.
Go before 1.
I think it works the same way Windows Explorer would work, you know, in putting files in order.
So 0.001 percent bum ghost.
No, I think that would count the decimal point as a character rather than as the decimal counting.
So
it wouldn't know that that it was decimal.
So 007 bum ghost.
007 bum ghost would be the first one on the list of everyone's bum ghost movies.
Well, that's got what it didn't have
that's
to
got
be.
That sorted. Yeah, it actually reminds me of Primer. The film we talked about quite a bit, which was made on no money and is
Shane Carruth's film.
That's
yeah.
it. And involves time travel because it gets a bit Donnie Darko, this film as well.
Massive rabbits.
Massive fucking rabbits. No. It's a really creative film that for a smaller budget as $1 million is really fun, and they will not have the backing for the publicity behind it, so I would say as soon as
they need people to go to Q&A's afterwards,
they need people to go to Q&A's afterwards and really listen to what they have to say. No, I mean, it's called The Endless. You can also check out their previous films. As I say, Spring, I highly recommend. I have not seen their second one, which I think is called Resolution, but let me just have a look.
They need to start putting 007 in front of these.
007 Resolution. Yeah, that's right. Actually, Spring might have been their second one.
So, I mean, that's the thing. Everyone will start putting 007. I'm sorry to go off topic here.
What's the right?
Everyone will start putting 007 in front of their film. So yeah. 007 Bum Ghost will eventually be down. So you have to be 007.
What? Yeah.
A Bum Ghost. No, 007 A1 Bum Ghost.
A1 Bum Ghost. It's not to distract you from the A1 Bum Ghost chat, but Aaron Moorhead is also the cinematographer on it. So they have directed it, produced it, edited it, DOP'd it and acted in it and
so
written
he had
it.
To press record and then run around the other side and just
right.
in front of the camera.
Right.
I know that feeling.
Look, but it's an impressive feat, isn't it, that when people
yeah.
can actually come up with a good film by just doing it all themselves.
I wonder what that £1 million went on then.
It's true, just took $500,000 each.
Yeah. Well, how many Davids did you give it?
I think I'd give it 8.
That's good.
I properly enjoyed it, and it's nice to see, you know, a different kind of film.
Is it a nice length?
Yeah. It felt that way. It felt a decent length, actually. Let me just look up how long it actually is.
The police are coming to kill their dogs next door.
Thank God.
All the I've got to say, today's episode had all the guests,
all the characters,
all the regulars are in
yeah.
in force today.
In force. It feels like Camden is getting more mad and more dangerous.
When I've been walking to your house recently, there have been a lot more mental people about.
Yeah, there are. 1 hour 51. So it's just over a sort of for me, you know, efficient, elegant time. But it's under 2 hours, so that's good. No, I'd thoroughly recommend it. The Endless. Track it down. Well, that's enough for this week, I think.
Well, it's some important news.
You're bloody right. There is some important news.
Some sad and important news.
Well, both sad
and joyous.
Joyous news. Listeners, as Marek rightly points out, I have some important news, which is that next week will be my last Film Fandango for who knows how long, for the foreseeable future. Now, the reason for this is that myself and Danielle Ward, the co-creator of Film Fandango, with myself back in the Absolute days, are having a baby. And so our flat, where our baby will live, is no longer going to be a very good location for recording this, as it will be chaotic, and I don't know how much time I can commit to going to the cinema. So, for the foreseeable, Film Fandango is not going to cease. Marek is going to carry on and turn it into something slightly different. Can you tell them what plans?
So the plan is, unfortunately, it's going to just be me talking nonsense, but not only me. I'm going to go to the cinema with a guest each week. That is the plan. And then we are going to talk about the film we've just seen after we straight out of the cinema.
Yes.
And then I'll ask them some questions about their favourite films and some general cinema questions. So please keep on sending me your letters. That's very important because I don't want to hear my nonsense opinions for 40 minutes. So send those letters in.
And nothing is going to change in terms of all of that. You can still get the podcast in the same place. If you're a subscriber, you will still come in to your devices in the same way. And you can still get in touch with us by going to filmfandango.com and filling out the form.
And also, if everyone's donated, thank you very much. And please keep on donating so I can pay for all the cinema tickets.
But Marek starts shouldering that burden all on his own. Yes, so sad times, but also, you know, happy times for us. So next week will be the last time for a decent length of time that you will hear myself and Buddy, I'm afraid, as well.
And the shit dogs next door.
The shit dogs next door are going to come with me, and hopefully the sirens as well will be far less. It's the end of an era, but the start of a new one.
Well, you'll be back, though.
I'll be back. Yeah, but for this week, that's enough. Thank you for listening, and keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.